British Public Radio. Food and Drink.
Bonjour and welcome to the UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with winemaker Pascal Chatenay. He manages the XL Wine Labs and has been looking at corks and the causes of cork taint and reduction in wine. So he's all about the closures. We're going to be finding out about how the fight against cork taint is going, what the cork industry has done to minimise this terrible problem, research into other cork taint aromas rather than the classic cork taint TCA. But first up, let's have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Well, Gerard Basset has been announced as the Decanter 2013 Man of the Year. The world's best sommelier can add this to the list of letters after his name, which include MS for Master Sommelier, MW, MBA and OBE. He's widely accredited with transforming the perception of sommeliers around the world. He learnt the ropes as a chef, a restaurant manager and sommelier, rising to prominence as head sommelier at Chewton Glen, the luxury spa hotel in Hampshire, which he joined in 1988. He then went on to co-found the Hotel du Vin and is now owner of the Hotel Taravina in the New Forest. He's spent as much time mentoring young sommeliers and restaurant professionals as he has building successful businesses. And he said of his profession, if you want to sell it well, you have to be the one to buy it in the first place, to capture and retain your enthusiasm.
Congratulations to Gerard. I was looking at the breakdown of what countries people are from who won the Decanter Wine Awards Top Man of the Year over the last 29 years. And from the highest to lowest, we've got 11 out of the 29 came from France, 3 from Italy, 3 from Australia, US and London, and 2 from Spain, 1 from Germany, Argentina, Portugal, Lebanon and Austria. If you look a bit deeper into France, 7 of the 11 come from Bordeaux. That's more from Bordeaux than from Germany, Spain and Italy combined. Not a problem, just interesting that almost a third of the most important people in the world of wine come from Bordeaux, according to Decanter. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, you may recall that back in 2010, the British government was being criticised for stocking up its wine cellars in times of austerity. The reason given back then was that it was in preparation for the Pope's visit. But now, for the first time, the government is to auction off wines from its official cellar, selling off valuable wines that are approaching their peak. A handful of lots with an estimated total value of £50,000 will be featured in Christie's Fine and Rare Wines sale on the 21st of March. The wines include a 6-bottle case of 1970 Chateau Petrus with an estimate of £6,000 and 12 bottles of the 1986 Chateau Mouton Rothschild, again at £6,000. These have been stored in the government hospitality cellar in Lancaster House near Buckingham Palace since they were purchased from UK merchants. This all follows on from a decision in 2011 making the government review and report to Parliament annually on costs, consumption, purchases and the value of the wine cellar.
While buying high-end wines can sometimes be a good investment, I don't believe the government should be in the business of trading wines. And they certainly shouldn't be in the business of buying first growths when there are many good wines at much more modest prices and are less showy about ostentatious consumption. The more scrutiny the cellar gets, the better as far as I'm concerned. I did Google some of the prices associated with the wines and Christie's are putting a high premium on it. For example, the 1970 Chateau Petrus, it averages for £1,500. Where they get the £6,000 price, that'd be interesting. Also, I always find it funny that they're saying that a 1970s wine, that's 44-year-old wine, is now starting to get near its peak. I would say it's a granny.
Finally this week, the Chianti Classico Consorzio have announced a new top band in the Chianti Classico DOCG appellation, which is to be called Gran Selezioni. Wine in this new top band above reservas must be produced solely from estate-grown grapes and can only be sold 30 months after harvest, with a minimum of 3 months bottle age. The president of Chianti Classico Consorzio, Sergio Zingarelli, said the new top band has been designed to give more emphasis to the top quality wines produced in the Chianti Classico denomination. Final approval is awaited by the Ministry of Agriculture, but the Chianti Classico Consorzio inspects the new law to come into effect later this year. Unreleased wines from the 2010 vintage will then qualify as Gran Selezioni. That's all very well and good, but top Italian buyer David Berry Green of Berry Brothers and Rudd is not convinced. He argues that whilst the quality of Chianti Classico wines has never been higher, this new classification is just bureaucratic tinkering and adds no real value. He says there's been no real effort to reclassify the boundaries of vineyards or to study the unique terroir that are at the heart of the stylistic differences between the villages. That's all from me this week, but don't forget, as ever, to check out these stories at our website, 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. Next up, we're going to be talking with Pascal Chatenay about cork taint.
The complexity with what we call cork taint is important. Why? Because, in fact, we are talking about musty of flavor.
Mm.
And to explain this musty of flavor in a bottle of wine, we have plenty of sources. Traditionally, we are blaming mostly the cork because it is and it was mostly true that the cork was responsible for the development of some contamination with 2,4-6-3-chloroanisole, so the famous TCA.
Yeah, 2,4-6
2,4-6-3-chloroanisole.
Trichloroanisole, yep.
It's more easy to say TCA.
Mm-hmm.
But making research on this topic in our labs, we have discovered that plenty of wines were affected with musty of flavors with absence of TCA.
Before we get into those, where does the TCA come from in corks?
In the case of corks, if we are back to maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the main source of TCA was the transformation, the biotransformation with common microorganisms and especially molds of TCP, the precursor of TCA, which is a trichlorophenol. And this trichlorophenol was produced chemically during the bleaching of the cork. The bleaching step in the cork making is important to clean and to adapt the color of the cork. And in the past, the corker were using a solution of chlorine. But chemically, they were producing TCP. TCP has no taste and no odor. But if some molds grow on the cork, these molds are able to transform the TCP into TCA.
So was the mold on the cork on the tree, or is it picked up afterwards after processing?
At all the stage. You have molds at all the levels.
Okay.
It's impossible to guarantee cork without molds, because molds are part of the cork making process, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you have molds at all the levels, and each time these molds are front of TCP, they are making TCA.
Okay.
And TCA is very volatile and very odorant. And so it's why you are able to detect it when you are tasting a glass of wine.
Okay. And the chlorine that they were using to do it, to clean and bleach the corks. So you've got the TCP, you've got a bit of mold, and you add a bit of chlorine,
yes,
and that's your chemical soup. I thought it was to do with taking the bark too close to the ground with them. I thought there was molds in the ground and microbes in the ground.
That is true. There is another origin, which is, we were talking about the cork process of making a cork, but there is another origin.
Oh, well, before we get into that, how did the cork industry clean it up? Because I see cork taint now. The incident is dropping a lot.
Exactly as we say, today the cork industry is no more using chlorine bleaching. They have replaced the chlorine with peroxide.
Peroxide. Okay.
Peroxide have no more problem in front of TCP and TCA. It's a clean, very clean
process.
It does
smell though, because you go into a hairdresser and they're using peroxide to make all these brunettes blondes. You know, it has a really quite a noticeable nose.
I agree, but nothing to see with cork taint.
Okay.
So if you smell the blonde aroma in your glass of wine, maybe it can be the effect of peroxide bleaching. But we are changing the way to talk, I think. But the cork industry have changed their process to solve a big part of the problem. But even we have replaced the chlorine by peroxide.
I thought the other thing they were doing was also putting it on concrete to dry out, because you have to season the cork.
It's a combination of small details. to reduce the risk of mold growth.
Okay.
So clean concrete, less humidity in the cork material, cleaner space, more ventilation, and shorter time to process the box. Well, everything is positive. But another very important part in the process is to discard all the bottom part of the box which are in contact with the earth. Because in contact with earth, with more humidity, more risk of microorganism contamination, even you are not bleaching, obviously, the bark at this stage on the tree, you have risk of TCA.
From the core?
Yes, because we are not talking about the same microorganism.
Okay.
And these microorganisms are able to produce chlorination of phenols.
Okay.
From the basic chloride you can find in the bark or in the earth.
Oh, okay.
So that is another process.
So you've got a microbe that can produce the chlorine, and then you've got your TCP interacting to create the TCA with other molds.
Exactly.
So by the time the bark's harvested, it's already got TCA on it.
Exactly. You got TCA since the beginning, if we can say. Huh?
Yep.
So it's why we can explain after 10 years, we have reduced drastically the percentage of cork affected by TCA, changing the process of bleaching, but it's not reduced to zero because we have also another origin with much more less frequency of contamination from the bark.
Yeah.
And it's why the cork industry has developed other improvements in the cork making process with a lot of process of decontamination of the cork using a combination of steam or using a combination of steam and alcohol washing or using supercritical CO2 to decontaminate the corks.
I've seen that supercritical. That's for the Diam corks, isn't it?
That is an example. Yes, Diam corks.
Yeah, okay. And that's...
And it works in that case very efficiently. You can reduce to 0% the risk of flavor.
So how do they use steam to clean it out? Because I thought you wanted to keep water away from the bark.
You know, in that case, we are working on the finished product, not finished because we haven't the coating, but the cork is finished and
it's cut out of the bark.
Yes, and we put the cork into a heat stream of steam, and thanks to the temperature and thanks to the wetting effect of the steam, you are able to extract the TCA which is present from the cork material.
Oh, how does that work?
It's like extraction, because TCA is volatile, so increasing the temperature, you are increasing the volatility.
Yeah.
And because the TCA is a hydrophobic molecule, which is very poorly soluble in the water, if you wet the cork and you increase the temperature, you are extracting the TCA from the cork.
You see,
for the CO2, it's the same, but with a different process. The difference with the supercritical CO2 is that you cannot treat classic natural corks because you are using high pressure, over 80 bars, over 90 bars.
Yep.
In that case, you are promoting very strong deformation of the cork. So the Diam corks is made with granulates.
Yeah, and then they glue it.
It means you glue the granulate after, and you produce the typical form of the cork just after.
And I've known Diam, and I'm quite happy with Diam. People talk about maybe the glue's falling apart after years.
Yes,
but
it's not perfect at this level.
But I've had wines with Diam that have been in there for 5 years, and everything seems
fine. Exactly, it depends what you have to adapt your stopper front of your wine. It means especially the shelf life of your bottle. If it is 3 months, 6 months, or 3 years, is different. If we are talking about 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years. Obviously, you have to make your choice of stopper front of the potential of aging of your wine.
Okay, let's move on to the other issues now. TBA, for example. TBA doesn't sound quite as nice as TCA. I don't know why, but what is TBA and how does it...
So, as I explained to you before, when we have made our research about cork taint and about the process to eliminate or to reduce the TCA contamination, we have been put in front of a rare situation, a strange situation, with wine not bottled, with no contact with cork, but with TCA of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
When we have made the analysis of this wine, it was not possible to identify TCA.
Oh, okay. So it's got the off flavors, but not the TCA.
So we have identified all the molecules which were responsible for this cork taint, but in fact, it was nothing to see with the cork taint. It was a musty mold of flavor. And so we have identified two main molecules, which are first the tetrachloroanisole, TECA, so it means TCA with one more chlorine atom.
What is it normally? 2-4-6.
It's 2-3-4-6.
2-3.
TECA.
Mm. Okay.
And on the other end, we have also identified 2-4-6 TBA, which is tribromoanisole. What have in common all these molecules? We're talking about halogens, chlorines or bromines. And a common property of these molecules, when they are methoxylated, they give a musty aroma.
Okay, so
when you taste a glass of wine, it's not possible to say it is TCA, it is TBA, or it is TECA, because all these molecules, which are very different, smell more or less the same thing.
Okay.
So we are sometimes blaming the cork when, in some occasion, the situation is completely different.
Okay, so TBA, so it's not coming from the cork at all?
No, TBA and TCA are what we call environmental contaminations. They are related with contamination of the wineries frequently, because we have identified that these products are byproduct of the biotransformation of pesticides used for the protection of plenty of materials used for the in the building, like wood, especially wood, but wood material or composite made with wood, but also plastic materials, because for example we use to protect the plastic material front of the fire brominated molecules which call a brominated flame retardant.
Okay. Yeah.
BFR. And this product, in the particular condition of the winery, which is low ventilation, high humidity, and the risk of molds development, these molecules are transformed into TBA or TECA, if we are talking about tetrachlorophenols, a pesticide which is commonly used today for the preservation of the wood.
Okay, so if you've got a winery made out of wood... and this is what Rainer Young was saying last year, was that you could find that the TBA is being produced in the walls of the winery, for
yes.
example.
Yes.
But if it's in the walls, how does it get to the corks?
That is a nice...
Does it go in
wine,
through the corks?
That is a nice question. In fact, the interesting point in the discovery is that we have put in evidence that the contamination was not direct. Because what is the relation in between wine and the roof, for example, of the winery made with treated wood? There is no direct contact. So we have identified that the contamination were indirect through the atmosphere of the building.
Yeah, okay. And you can't smell it when you're in the building?
You can smell when you enter in the building. Immediately, you can smell it. But after some minutes, you are saturated, so you cannot anymore detect the contamination of the air or the contamination in your wine. It is why when you are tasting the wine in this contaminated environment, you are not able to detect any of flavor. And when you are back at home opening the bottle, you say, wow, it's horrible.
So, but normally, unless it's something like an open top fermenter, a lot of wine spends a lot of time in closed environments.
So we have different situation. Contamination of the wine, of the bulk wine, during its process of aging, because more or less, we need at some moments to manipulate the wine in contact with air to give some oxygen, especially in the case of the red wine. You know, oxygen is important for the color stabilization.
Mm-hmm.
When you age the wine in barrel, in oak barrel, the wood by itself is microporous, so it allows some exchange in between atmosphere and wine by itself. And finally, we have also contamination through material which has been highly contaminated by the atmosphere, like corks,
So if you've got a bag
during their storage in the winery.
Yeah, okay.
And then when you use these corks into the bottle, you are contaminating your wine.
Even though it's near transmission, without it being touch transmission, the levels of contamination must be very low.
Very, very low.
And is TBA, because
we're talking about PPT.
Parts per trillion.
Yes.
So what's the threshold for TBA?
For example, with a TCA, we admit that we have a strong alteration over 3 PPT.
3 parts per trillion, yeah.
Yes. With a change in the aroma over 1.52. It doesn't mean that you have clearly, it's easy to identify an off flavor, but the character of the wine changes. Over 3, and the more the quantity is higher, the more it is easy to detect a musty off flavor, a cork taint.
So
with TBA, we are talking about similar things.
Okay, so the first thing with cork taint normally is you lose the fruitiness of the wine.
Yes, exactly.
And then you get the cork taint coming through as the level of parts per trillion goes up. That's awfully low numbers, aren't we? You know, that's pretty sensitive.
It's a big problem because we are talking about very, very tiny amounts of molecules.
Okay. And so that's how the TBA gets into the wine. How about the TECA? Is that the same mechanism?
So the TECA, it's also a byproduct coming from the transformation of TECP, which is a molecule which has been used, but which is always used as a pesticide for the preservation of the wood. For the TBA, we were talking about TBP, which is also a preservative of the wood, or product coming from BFR, and so flame retardant additives to plastic or synthetic polymers.
Okay, so it sounds like if you're building a winery, you shouldn't really build a winery out of wood these days.
I think it's a shame to think about that, but a lot of people are trying to avoid to use wood in a winery. When wood, I think it's a very interesting material when you are talking about a winery environment. So it's not the wood by itself which is dangerous, it's how do you protect it.
So ventilation.
The ventilation and if you use pesticide to treat the wood, what kind of pesticide you are using. Fortunately, you have plenty of other molecules which are not dangerous for the wine during its the aging of the preservative front of the time. So we have plenty of solution, but you have to control what kind of pesticide is used in all the material entering in the winery to protect the quality on a long-term basis.
I tell you what, when you go to the lumberyard to buy your timber, they don't tell you what pesticides we use to treat the wood. So.
No, because when you are asking for a building and you are thinking about wood, you are not thinking about the treatment used to protect the wood.
Yeah.
And in fact, you have to be very concerned.
Okay, what about things like a lot of fence posts and vineyards are treated with tannelization. I don't know if you know that word, but you know, wood in the vineyard, fence posts need to be protected. Could you get transmission or problems occurring there?
No, because in the vineyard, we don't use that kind of product to protect the wood to maintain the canopy. Or you use the protection through some particular salts, like copper salts or something like that.
Yep.
So there is absolutely no risk of contamination with that product.
Is copper
salts?
We
never used the chlorophenols or the bromophenols to protect the poles used in the vineyards.
Okay. And how common do you think TBA and TECA are? Are they?
That is an important question. The same question asked 10 years ago in Europe, it was critical. A significant percentage of winery were affected by this problem. Today, thanks to our work, I think we have solved more or less this problem in Europe. I don't want to say there is no more problem because we are detecting every day, but we are not talking about the same proportion. In South America is different, because in South America, instead to have problem with tetrachloronisole, we have more problem with tribromloranisole, with the TBA. And why? Because they are still using woods treated by TBP and strongly treated by PBP. So it's a question of information, it's a question of teaching, and it's a question of time to manage this problem, to solve this problem.
That would imply that I'd expect to get, well, not necessarily, I suppose, if it's TBA and it's getting in through the corks because the corks are being exposed to it, that would be fine. But otherwise, you don't still don't, I've never seen a cork-tainted screw cap.
Of course we have.
You have?
Of course.
But how?
Imagine if we can contaminate a natural cork or technical cork because we have stored it in a contaminated atmosphere, we can contaminate also screw caps. How? It's aluminum. How do we can...
It'd be on the surface, but it wouldn't be absorbed by it.
Yes, no, but not by the caps by itself, but by the liner.
The liner, okay.
The liner is synthetic. It's plastic material. And the plastic material have a very, very high affinity for the TBA or the TCA. So it's why we are able to identify cork taint in screw cap bottle sometimes.
Okay, so that would be the styrofoam liners, the white ones. The aluminium liners would be...
The aluminium liner, absolutely no problems. But the polymer part of the liner can be contaminated.
Yeah, but you've still got an aluminium layer between the...
It's not in direct contact.
Yeah, so
you have always a polymer layer front of the tin or front of the aluminium liner.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
You cannot put in direct contact aluminium with wine.
Why not?
Because wine is acid.
Yeah.
And it will attack the aluminium.
Oh, yeah. So all the aluminium cans always have a plastic liner.
And aluminium
liner,
is toxic material. So we have to protect it with a layer of a synthetic plastic.
Okay, and the plastic in front of the layer can still absorb it.
Exactly.
So you can still get in.
And we have plenty situation of contamination of the screw caps during this transportation because they use pallets of wood which are treated with TBP or TECP, and with time they are affected by molds, and these molds produce TBA or TECA. And finally, if you maintain a long time your screw caps on these pallets, through the plastic bag, through the carton box, you are able to find some caps contaminated heavily.
The thing is, if a winery has created corked wines with screw caps, then I would expect a whole batches to be faulty rather than just random bottles. If this is the case, then I would expect it to be a lot more common than it is today. I simply do not notice cork taint in wines with screw caps. So while I can see Pascal's argument, I think the incidence must be very, very low. I open and test around 2,000, maybe 3,000 wines a year, of which about half of them are screw caps. And I haven't seen any cork wines that I can say, which I can conclude must be less than 1 in 1,000 easily. Compare this to my incidence of cork taint, which is probably around 1 or 2% these days, and well down from the previous highs of about 5% 10 years ago. I also think that the wafer-thin plastic on the aluminium liner and the screw caps, which are supposed to harbour the TCA, TBA, and TECA, there is a lot less room than a spongy, porous cork. And to finish up the show this week is our quote, and the quote is from Humphrey Bogart. The problem with the world is everyone is just a few drinks behind. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a British Public Radio presentation in association with the wine tasting company 3050. For more, go to 3050.co.uk.